as big as a spring.
One cold November night, 101 years ago, a man sat at a table in the middle of a dry pond, contemplating an olive. Oh, I see you brought your own props.
You like an olive?
Figures. Ew, these are grotesque. That's real. Oh, God. As olives go, it was perfectly ordinary, except for the vestigial wings sprouting from three of its corners. It also tended to fade in and out of focus, but when it was in focus, the olive appeared to be black, dark black, blacker even than the magic to which it owed its existence. Plus, it was one of those rare olives called blammos that occasionally explode when they attain consciousness. No, thank you. So perhaps it wasn't so ordinary after all. Well, then the man whose olive was the object of his contemplation was entirely ordinary. After all, he had no wings, he didn't fade in and out of focus, and he hadn't detonated. Not yet, anyway. What he had done, however, was to communicate with the olive on a very primitive level. He hissed. The olive hissed back. He rubbed his elbow. The olive wriggled one of its wings. He hummed a whole tone scale. He hummed a whole tone scale. And the olive... and the olive, no matter it was physically incapable of humming, reproduced the scale a semitone higher.
I can't do it along with the recording.
An impossibility, you say?
It's an impossibility.
Not at all. You see, in only a few weeks, the olive would change from a small edible drupe into the larval stage of Olive Messiaen, a French music monger. There is precedent for a stone fruit turning into a composer. Luigi Cherubini was descended from a bowl of cherries. And Harry was a peach long before he became a parch. The transmogrification of the olive to Olive Messiaen was notable only because it took place in the middle of a dry pond. Interspecific transformations involving whole tone scales.
Etc.
Typically occur in environments that feature sodden climes. But if we examine the pond more closely, we see that it isn't dry after all. Scattered higgledy-piggledy across the bed are small pockets of ooze from which lichen-encrusted rocks protrude. That's so disgusting.
I know, you just hate olives. I knew that.
Pull out any one of them and you'll likely find the underside coated with slime mold. And if there's a better place for a composer to take root, science hasn't yet discovered it. Composers started showing up in slimy ecosystems in the late 1800s. As deciduous logs and leaf mold gradually replaced caves as suitable and indeed desirable living quarters for them. Hamilton Harty, Nikolai Metner, Hilding Rosenberg, Cyril Scott.
Cyril Scott!
And
we could tell that you played Cyril Scott very embarrassingly at a concert some 25 years ago.
But we need not.
But I have a recording.
But we need not.
Not with me.
Thank goodness for small favors.
Yes, yes, yes. Cyril Scott, do look up Cyril Scott.
Or not. Cyril Knott and others sprang seemingly spontaneously into existence in surroundings shunned by earlier tunesmiths. It would be unfair to say that their compositions reflected these environs. However, we never said we were fair, and there must be some reason that none of those four is at the top of many music aficionados' best in-show lists.
Except perhaps ours.
Right. But back to the olive.
Ah, the olive. The olive. The olive.
Having been sufficiently contemplated by the man sitting at the table, it retreated deep within itself to begin its lugubrious makeover into French human form. Mm. A month later, Olive A spontaneously combusted in the womb of Cécile Sauvage, and the rest, as they say, is historical revisionism.
That's historical. Yes, we will tell you about that.
Although Messiaen's forebears can be traced to a copse in the eastern Mediterranean basin, the same cannot be said of the other composers on today's concert. In fact, we're not even sure they're descended from fleshy fruits. Peter Hamlin, Chan Ka-nin, Zachary Cooper. Are there any others? No,
what,
never mind.
Composers?
Right. These names don't.
Not on this concert.
These names don't exactly ring a bell in the date and apricot cosmos. They do, however, ring the bell on the door of a house attached to this radiophonic broadcast, and we, Calvus and Damien, are
in the house
right now. The door is already open.
Closed.
The door is already closed.
Thank you.
So we invite you, the assembled audience, to join us and the aforementioned musical facilitators
in the house.
Zachary Cooper, quickly come up. Join us, tell us briefly about this piece while the musicians continue to wait for us. We were going to have a long-distance conversation shouting from the audience, but thought this might be better.
Well, thank you for coming up. Now, please take your seat again. We've had
All right, I'll see you soon.
Give us a quick précis about yourself, because you sort of hide your bio a little bit, and about piece.
My name is Zach. I play the guitar.
We know that.
Yeah. All right, I play the guitar, and I wrote this piece. It's about caterpillars.
The industrial strength machines that push dirt around, and the D7s.
The D7s, yeah. And also the little bugs. Too.
Okay, those two.
And you were a student of one of the members of the ensemble here for quite a while, Thomas L. Reed.
Yes.
And how was that?
It was great. It was inspiring.
Tell us the truth now.
It was terrible.
Good. This is a complex piece, we understand. It's hard on the musicians. Why were you hard on the
Excellent.
Musicians?
Excellent. I really didn't mean to.
We do. So
it's got wonderful, lots of repeating figures. It's very filigreed. It's you'll hear this incredible interchange, very contrapuntal. A lot of fun. Thanks.
Thank you.
Okay.
Band? Is band ready?
Steve Klimowski and Bonnie Thurber Klimowski playing Zachary Cooper's Caterpillar Secrets. Jealous, aren't you? I could see it. I could see it.
I was watching. I was thinking.
You were thinking that that number to the right is not the date the piece was written, but the date the composer was born.
Composers have short lives.
Ah, you're just hoping. Actually, that was, you know, we're in a period of time that composer and Village Voice critic Kyle Gann calls post-classical. It's kind of a period where the devices of not only the classical kind of composition, but the modernist period and the postmodernist period, the minimalist period, are all kind of adopted and wrapped up into a piece that is continuous, that is very elegant and very full of thoughts and a lot of depth. And that was this piece. Not only that, It was a veritable study in techniques for strings. You know, I think some of you may have been noticing that the cello, for example, aside from doing pizzicato and the kind of bow dragging that was developed in the mid-20th century, also was using a kind of a left-handed pizzicato while bowing at the same time, which is a technique goes back as far as, at least in violinist Paganini and perhaps before that. So here we have a young composer. We have Zachary who's sort of wrapped all this up into one piece. We're going to move on to an extended kind of a suite here, Visions for Ice by Peter Hamlin. This has a real strong relationship to, and in fact inspired by, the artwork of Chris Robbins. Can you come up, please, and talk about this? She'll be showing you these pieces as the piece progresses, but maybe you could tell us, Chris Robbins, something about how this came about and how you did your work here and the relationship between the art and the composer.
Well, I like to take pictures of ice close-ups so that nobody can really tell what it's a picture of. And many times Peter and I were out together on a lake and I took pictures of bubbles in the ice or something like that. The good thing about ice is you don't have to be in a beautiful location. You don't have to be in Vermont. You can find beautiful ice crystals in any mud puddle or any ugly old ditch. And if you take a close-up of it, nobody knows the difference.
It's an amazing thing, isn't it? Ice is just absolutely brilliant. You not only get the rainbows of colors with it and the reflections, but you get this kind of, you can get this microscopic world, too.
Right. Yeah. If you lift up ice that's just starting to form, it's all crystalline and fluffy inside. And if you happen to be in a mud puddle that's brown, you just use Photoshop and make it black and white.
So how do the pieces develop from this, or does the artwork develop with the simultaneous? Tell about that relationship.
Well, Peter decided to use the form of an ice crystal, which is a six-sided crystal, and use that to create the intervals in the chords and the rhythm. And he's processing the sound with the computer in each movement in a different way.
I wish we could. He's working on his tech. We can't drag him up here, which would be a lot of fun because, as we know, of course, not only is Peter a composer, but he was a radio and TV host for a long time. So he's got this pattern really down better than we ever could. So, are you ready? Do you want to join us? Thank you, Chris. Thank you very much. Peter will join us.
Thank you.
This is going to be an amazing experience. You'll be able to settle back into this composition. It's really quite extraordinary. Tell about how you developed the piece from the.
Well, I thought I'd better get around to working with some of Chris's beautiful work. It's a little weird, actually, to work with your wife collaboratively because you don't want to get any disagreements about how you're doing it. I didn't want her to say, boy, that music's really ugly. You should get rid of it. But
you sailed together, so
what we do.
That's a great thing, and it builds on that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Yeah. But I think all of us respond to different kinds of things when you write, and I love the idea of the structure, the color, the mood, all those features of a piece of artwork. It causes you to think of musical ideas that you might not think of otherwise. For example, I don't know, Chris, could you show the first picture, Shimmering Gold? It's just a beautiful kind of, almost like fireworks when I looked at it, and all kinds of musical ideas came about from it, just from seeing that image. So that's why we like to get sources from outside of just our own brains for thinking of music.
For our radio listeners who can't see that image, it is it has two kinds of fans of ice with this kind of gold characteristic to them. If no one told you it was ice, you would have no clue. It is really quite amazing. It almost has a deco feel. It looks like a close-up of a kind of an Art Deco sculptural area, kind of a fantasy on a wall.
Yeah. Yeah, a lot of her pictures are like that. Are there some others you could show? That show the number two, the second one, Ancient and Modern. This one, I thought, could be a something on a cave painting wall, maybe. It could be a modern artwork. It could be a sculpture.
More, if Moore were doing cave paintings.
Yeah, exactly. Or I was imagining almost like a stone sculpture, too. They're beautiful pieces.
These are great pieces, and we'll get to see all of them during the course of the piece.
You make your fine
adjustments. Yeah, Peter Hamlin teaches composition at Middlebury. He's also, and you won't hear this tonight, he's an accordionist. And he has an entirely different role in that, because he can play you some really wild accordion music. And he's if you go online, you can actually find him. I think he's got some pieces on YouTube where he's doing some duets with, I think it was a fiddler, but I'm not positive. Anyway, it was really entertaining. Who was that? You have no idea. So we'll listen to it. I think everybody's just about ready. We're going to hear the premiere. This is the premiere of Visions of Ice, and Peter will be working the technology, the computer from the mixer, and all of his work there. And then the Vermont Contemporary Music Ensemble will have the group ready to go here. Visions of Ice by Peter Hamlin.
Thank you. Thank you.
in your Hamlet, yes.
You know, it's about 30 degrees colder in here than when we started.
Yes, it is. Well, that was to keep the noise of the fans down. Visions of Ice by Peter Hamlin. That was Berta Frank on flute and alto flute, Bonnie Thurber-Klonowski on cello, and Steve Klonowski on clarinet and bass clarinet. In the back, there are CDs, recordings, books, images to look at, and a veritable cornucopia of non-acoustic, live acoustic items. Peter Hamlin, also I should have credited you as live electronics in that ensemble, of course. There will be an intermission now, but a reception afterwards. Please join us, and we'll tell you a little bit about why we're here when we come back afterwards. You're listening to Calvis and Damien
in the House
on the Non-Pop International Network.